I didn't really know what I wanted to do when I graduated. You're taught maths, you're taught Pythagoras' theorem, but you're not taught how to manage your finances.
What's your relationship been like with resilience and dealing with rejection? And
so, being perfectly candid with you guys, it used to really, really upset me. Getting rejected, you feel it quite deeply.
It sounds like you must have had an appetite for risk.
How do you deal with that pressure when you're kind of running the ship on your own?
My love life is an absolute shambles.
What was the why that was getting you out of bed in the morning?
I haven't really talked about it much. I don't really talk about it on my platform.
Well, what advice do you give to people to help them navigate failure throughout life?
If you've never failed, then you've never tried. Ultimately, it's this idea that nobody has it all figured out.
Welcome to another episode of the We Have a Meeting podcast. So today we are here to inspire you. We've got a podcast host, entrepreneur and host of the biggest event for 20-somethings and graduates in the UK. So our guest today started their podcast Talk 20s in 2020 to help bridge the gap between full-time education and the real world. The podcast is home to over 25,000 listeners and was a finalist in the British Podcast Awards 2021. Prepare to be inspired by today's guest. It's Gabby Mendez. Gabby, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. What an intro. Thanks very much.
There we go. We're not here to mess around. And thank you for joining us. Well, we've followed you in your journey. We start our podcast the same way every time. So I'll hit you with the same question, Gabby. Who are you and what problem do you solve?
So my name's Gabby. I'm a 28-year-old woman living in the UK, in the north of the UK to be specific, but I'm not originally from here. I moved up here about 7 years ago. Previous teacher, then career changed into events, and now I am an entrepreneur and I run a business that kind of put my former two careers together. And essentially we're a media and events company that helps bridge that gap between adult life and the stuff that they don't teach you in school, really. So that's the problem that we solve. You know, all those questions you're asking yourself, why on earth didn't they teach us this in school? That's what we help you with.
Good. Okay. And then if I was, say, we like to think of it as like a bit of a doctor-patient analogy, but for somebody that your podcast would be the perfect prescription, what kind of symptoms might they be struggling with? Where might they be in their life? What might they need help with?
Oh, I like that. I think you're probably at a stage where you know you want to do something with your life and you're excited about the next steps, but you have no idea how to get there. So you feel like you have this desire to want to do better in your life or to improve your life or to help fix whatever problem you're struggling with at this moment in time. But the problem is you don't know how to get there and you feel a little bit lost and maybe you're not surrounded by the people who will help you get there. So essentially that's what our community is all about.
You mentioned something really interesting just off the top there. So things that you wish you'd known in school. I think I was definitely someone who thought this isn't for me. I didn't get the point of school the whole time I was there. But what are those top two or three things that people are saying, I wish I knew that in school. I'm completely unprepared. Why didn't I get taught this?
Yeah, so our content, we kind of split it down into four key pillars. So we have finance and money. Naturally, none of us were ever really taught about how to manage our money effectively. You're taught maths, you're taught Pythagoras' theorem, but you're not taught how to manage your finances, whether that's how you get paid, what national insurance is, what taxes are, what council tax is, rent, mortgages, all of those kind of things. Never mind what you're left with and what you should do with saving, investing, and, you know, whatever you want to do with your money. So that's our like first pillar. Our second pillar is career and business. So navigating your career services in schools and universities, notoriously shit. Like, I'm sorry, but they actually are. Like, I previously, a couple of years back, I worked with a university, I won't name names, but they had a careers department of 8 people for 24,000 students. You tell me how 8 people can help 24,000 people with their career effectively. Like, that's just not possible, right? So careers and business, it can be hard to navigate, to know what your next step is, to know how to get from a shit career that you absolutely hate to one that you actually love, whether you should be doing it just for the money or whether you should find something that you actually love and enjoy but maybe doesn't pay as good as the others. All of those types of conversations are really, really tough. And also there's not next to no education on how to start your own business, practically speaking. So yes, you can go to university and you can study business, but quite often this won't teach you the how-tos of actually to start your own business. It will give you loads of advice on how to look at other businesses and work within a business, but there isn't so much on entrepreneurship. So that's kind of what we cover with the career and business part of the platform. And we have well-being and relationships. So well-being, naturally, we talk a lot about mental health. How do you keep a happy life? Like, how do you have a great social life, but also balance that with work and all of that kind of stuff. And then relationships. Now this can be like, you know, friendships, platonic relationships, but also how you navigate like your first serious relationship, because that can leave so many people if it's not done properly, or for, you know, you land yourself in difficult situations, can leave a lot of people like messed up. And you know, a lot of people end up going to therapy later in their life because of the relationships that they've had, and that could be family, it could be partners, it could be so many different things. So we want to talk about it and normalize talking about relationships early on. Then the last one is fun and adventure. We thoroughly believe that, you know, all of those four pillars, they're equal to each other. Like they're all like 25%. You should be thinking about your finances as much as you think about your career. You should be thinking about your well-being and relationships as much as you should be thinking about having fun. It's not like your career is the most important thing. It's not like the finance is the most important thing. We want to build a well-rounded person. So those are the topics that we kind of tend to typically cover on the podcast, but it varies. There's so many interesting people that we've had on the podcast.
And those pillars, I'm guessing, but you must have a personal relationship with all of them. That's probably why you've picked them, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm like a sponge when I speak to all of our guests. You know, I'm so lucky and privileged to kind of sit on the other side of the sofa to so many inspiring people and kind of get to like tap into their brains. It's a really amazing opportunity. So I have come to learn so much and be able to kind of understand so many different perspectives on all of those different things, whether that's, you know, different family backgrounds, you know, different financial circumstances that you're coming from, different relationships. You know, I've been in a long-term relationship since I was 18 years old. So obviously I have like to learn more about relationships and other people's challenges. I have to hear what everyone else is experiencing. So yeah, absolutely. I've got a personal connection to it all, but I also feed off all the other guests and experts we have on the podcast too.
You said earlier, Gabby, that you used to be a teacher. So it's a very safe, stable job, something that people are proud of. And it's you're going to get a good pension at the end of it. Obviously, something happened along the way where you said, actually, this isn't for me. Talk me through that journey. Where were you at in your life where you did all this work to get there and then went, actually, not for me anymore?
I'll be honest, on day one, really, like I went to be a teacher because my mum said it would be a good career. And I didn't really know what I wanted to do when I graduated. So I did study education at university, but I want to make it super clear, like I did not study to be a teacher. The course that I was looking at just really interested me in terms of the actual subject matter. So it used to be called Culture, Citizens and Education, which meant it was all about understanding human behavior, which is practically what I do for a job now, right? But it was all about, you know, the history of education and society and how we've grown into different cultures, psychology, sociology, philosophy. There were so many different aspects to my course and none of it was about practical teaching. But on the year that my cohort joined, they decided the program's staying the same, but we're just going to call it BA Education, which really frustrated me because I was like, I wanted to do so much more than just something that looked like I just trained to be a teacher for 3 years. But at the end of the day, it was the course matter that interested me. So I was like, I'm going to do it because of the person I'll become, not because of the title at the end of it. So I got my BA in education and everyone around me was kind of who did the course wasn't really thinking like me and was really thinking that they did want to be a teacher. And so I got to the end of my course and I wanted to move to the Northwest to kind of be with my partner. And I struggled to kind of know what that right next step was because I hadn't made up in my mind. You know, at one point I was like, I wanted to be an Ofsted inspector. Hell no, do I want to be an Ofsted inspector? They cause absolute so much stress for teachers. And then I was like, well, I want to do, you know, I want to go into kids TV presenting. I wanted to do this. And there were so many different things that I wanted to do that I thought, how can I use this degree? And teaching was one of those things where I was just like, you know, I'll do it if I have to. And then I got to the end of it and I was like, well, I don't really know what I'm going to do. And I think I had that natural panic when people do graduate and just think, I just need a job now. And so, yeah, kind of being honest, walked into a teaching job. And I think I wish they'd kind of pushed me a little bit harder, because I probably would have gone, nah, I can't bother, don't want to do this, it's too much stress. But yeah, got a teaching job, got a teaching kind of course to teach secondary French. So my dad's French, so there's a shortage of French teachers, so they're absolutely crying out for them. They wanted teachers in French. So I went and did that. And yeah, it was just from day dot, I was just like, I don't know what I'm going to do, but like, I can't stay and do this. So I did two years. I got my full teacher's qualification, because then I thought, no one can ever take my once you've done your full year, no one can ever take your teacher qualified status away from you. So I'll always be qualified as teacher, but I am never going back ever. I've never thought about going back since I've left.
Interesting. And when you knew, like, if you knew from like day one, you were like, this isn't where I'm going to go, were you planning your next steps, or were you just like trying to figure it out? Like, what was the point where you said, actually, I know where I need to go now, or I don't know where I want to be, but I know what path I want to go down, and it's not this path? What did that look like?
Well, obviously, it took me 2 years to kind of get out of it. So obviously, this was like a long time kind of thinking, you know, I'm not really sure what I'm going to do next. I started a really, what kind of kicked off Talk 20s actually, is I started a bit of a blog. And obviously, you can't have like social media really as a teacher. I don't know if things have changed now, because obviously social media is so normal now, but you have to kind of hide your identity as a teacher. So I had a really like hidden blog where I used to write all my thoughts and feelings about being in my 20s, being a teacher. And actually, if you search why I left teaching, or at one stage, if you'd have searched that in America or in the UK, it would be the number one page on thing that would come up on Google. So used to do pretty well. And that kind of like started all of this. I think for me, it was kind of a lot of like experimentation. Where do things naturally take me? And that did mean that it took me obviously 2 years to leave a job that I absolutely really didn't enjoy, but I was still building up skills in the process. It wasn't wasted time. I was still learning. Like, I learned so much of what I do now is because of the skills I learned whilst being a teacher. You know, I was presenting a workshop to university students this week, and I couldn't have done that if I hadn't done my teaching. So I was still gaining skills whilst also trying to figure out this path of like, okay, what am I supposed to do in my life? Because I'm still trying to figure it out.
So it sounds like you must have had an appetite for risk, and I think that's often what tends to hold people back. They might have a business idea or something they want to try, or a left field pursuit, but just that idea of the risk makes them a bit nervous. So I suppose if someone's listening to this and they're in that camp of thinking, I've got the idea, but I just maybe don't have the right appetite for risk, what advice or what would you tell them?
I think you can grow your appetite to risk, actually. I think it's more just about it's a bit much like you would like investing. I think risk is all about kind of compounding. You take a little risk and you go, oh, you know, that was a bit nervous. I can't believe I actually did that. And then you start to see the benefits. And then it kind of builds and builds from there until you get to the point where you're taking massive risks and you're going, okay, I know this is going to pay off because I trust myself. I think a lot about risk is that it's that ability to learn to trust that the choices you're making that might seem a little bit scary are actually going to pay off in the long run. But you need evidence to suggest that is the case. So start off by making like smaller ones and kind of build on that over time, because that's the only way that you're going to ever be able to grow that. Some people, yes, they've got a great appetite to risk, or some people are more risk averse, but I do think it is something that you can just build up over time. Because now, you know, especially things like for me, like, as an employer now, like my first ever hire felt like a massive risk, but my second hire felt a lot easier, you know? And I think those kind of things, you just kind of grow and you build and you compound on that. It's like building blocks, basically.
And when was the first time in that journey where you thought, okay, right, I can breathe a bit now, I think I've made the right choice? How long did it take?
Never? No, I'm joking. I think I'm a person now that I've got my appetite for risk. I'm a person that I don't actually like staying stagnant. And I think that's, if I'm being completely honest with you guys, like where I was at like 2 weeks ago, I was really struggling because the business we just launched 20s Fest. It was a great success. And Olivia, who joined the team to work on 20s Fest, is now with us full time. So she was only supposed to join us for the 3 months before 20s Fest. weren't great. So she stayed with us. So a lot of the job that I used to do in the business is now part of Olivia's job. So I just sat there and I'm thinking, gosh, like, what am I going to do next? Like, of course, there's so many things that I can do, but I'm also like, I am probably best when I'm striving for a huge goal. And I think that's something that I've learned just in the short past couple of weeks, that like, actually for me, having a big goal that feels difficult to reach, a challenge, some element of risk in there, is actually when I work at my absolute best. So I actually don't like resting and like sitting where I am for too long. Like, I'll appreciate it for like maybe a month or so, and then I'm like, okay, where's the next challenge? Like, I'm ready for the next one. So I think that's a good thing and a bad thing, really, because it just means that you never stop. But that's what keeps me going, I think.
I agree with you on that one, Gabby. Sometimes me and Zach will message each other and we'll be like, it feels like I've had a very chilled out day today and I don't feel good about it. It's like, I like it when it's scrappy. Love the analogy that you're talking about there with risk and the compound. And we're big fans of like evidence. And it's like, right now I've taken this risk, there's enough evidence to support that. What one of the things that we find, obviously, we run a business together. So at the end of a hard week, I pick up the phone and I've got Zach on the other end to hear me cry.
Yeah.
A lot of business owners and entrepreneurs, it's a hard, lonely journey. So what coping mechanisms or how do you deal with that pressure when you're kind of running the ship on your own?
Yeah, I think solo entrepreneurship is not spoken about enough. I see some amazing duos out there, some brilliant people who I think, you know, they're like waving the baton and they're doing amazing things, and it's great because they've got each other and they complement each other's kind of skills. But I also know a lot of solo founders, and I think the thing is you have to stick together. And I think where I've been is super lucky is that because of what I do, I've been able to meet so many people who are in a very, very, very similar position to me. And a lot of people that come on the podcast end up becoming friends, peers, support networks. And so if they're having a crap day, like they'll feel perfectly okay to be honest and be like, oh, Gabs, I've had a rubbish day. Like, and I'll be like, don't worry, I've had a rubbish day too. Go on, tell me about it. And we can share and like have that kind of back and forth. So I would say that if you are a solo founder, is find your people around you. Like, don't leave it up to yourself. Like, join groups, go to networking events, meet people, like ask them to go for coffee and share those experiences. Because I think if I've had, you know, a difficulty with a certain topic, but someone sits there and goes, oh, don't worry, I've struggled with that too, immediately like the load is lightened, because you're like, okay, this is totally normal experience to be going through. How did they handle it? Let's take some tips from them. Then I can go back and crack on with it, instead of kind of burying yourself in, I don't think I can get through this stage because it feels overwhelming, you know?
And what is the one surprise? So since you've set out on this entrepreneurship journey, what's the one thing that's shocked you the most about it, Gabby?
That's a great question. I think how much can be achieved in such a short space of time, actually. And I think I'm only kind of really noticing this right now because I've been doing a couple of podcasts lately. And I think when you go on a podcast, it's definite, people are asking you questions, and it's a time that you probably sit there and do quite a lot of reflecting. And when people, like you say at the start, you read out all the things that we've done, like that's in a 3-year time frame. And I still had a job at the beginning of that. Like there was been a period of that where I was, you know, quit my job, then worked on my own for a year, then had a team. And so actually, like, I think it's that idea that like you overestimate what you can do in a week, but you underestimate what you can do in 10 years. Like, I'd love to like fast forward. Well, I wouldn't, because I kind of want to live it as well, but I'd love to see where we are in a year's time, in 5 years' time, and all those kinds of things, because actually I think I'll probably be blown away, because where I'm at right now in the business is further than I thought I'd ever get it. Way further than I ever thought I would get it, because I'm not surrounded by entrepreneurial people. I wasn't growing up like I am now, because I've made that my community, but like my parents aren't entrepreneurial. I didn't know from them how it was to run a business. I'm definitely learning through doing and just trying to take in as much information as I can and try and, you know, avoid as many mistakes from hearing from other people and stuff like that, and just keep going. So I think for me, I think the biggest shock is like what you can achieve within 3 years. Because if you'd have told me that I'd have started growing a team within that time, I'd have been like, sorry, what? How do I even pay them? I wouldn't even know.
I think it's really hard as well. I bet you sound like you're the same. It's often hard to look back and see things like that and go, oh, look how much you've done. Because if you're always looking ahead, what's next?
Yeah.
I don't want to get too comfortable. It's hard to give yourself that kind of pat on the back. So, completely agree. So we talked about a few different kind of habits that we need to build there. What about resilience and dealing with rejection? And what's your relationship been like with that side of things?
So being perfectly candid with you guys, I actually got diagnosed with ADHD earlier this year, and I haven't really talked about it much. I don't really talk about it on my platform, and I haven't talked about it much. But I've started to understand how that does affect me. And people who have ADHD often suffer with RSD, which is rejection sensitive dysphoria, which usually means that getting rejected, you feel it quite deeply, more deeply than your neurotypical person. And so I know from when I was younger that anyone who kind of said, no, you can't do this, or, you know, anyone who dumped me in the early days, anyone who kind of says, it used to really, really upset me. But again, I do feel it's something that I've started to learn, especially similar to that kind of risk appetite, that it's something that actually I know that I've started to learn that a no in a certain direction usually means it's because my life coach, she likes to say someone's no is making way for your biggest yes. And I do think that's the case, because now when I look back on things that have not worked out how I'd hoped or just didn't work out, it makes sense because of where we're at right now. So I think, again, it's that kind of learning from experience and kind of being able to look back and be like, okay, that wasn't meant to happen for these reasons, because if that had happened, this would have never happened. And that was so crucial to where we were going. So I would say that in the past, I've been incredibly sensitive to, you know, no, we're not going forward with this pitch, or no, we're going to do that. And now it's kind of stuff that doesn't have so much of an impact on me. I don't get as upset, because I'm like, okay, it's not meant to happen for a reason.
So I suppose in those early days when you were learning that lesson, and that was becoming maybe you're taking it personal, or it was just tougher in the mornings to get yourself going. What was the why that was getting you out of bed in the morning?
It's really hard. I think I have quite a few whys. Obviously, I have the why that I want to help as many young people not feel as alone as I did. That is ultimately the biggest why. But I also I think, and this is going into 20 something territory and pressures of being a 20 something, is that my why sometimes for getting up was that I want to be here by the time I'm 30. I had this stupid thing in my head where I'm like, I want to have done X, Y, Z by the time I'm 30. And I think, you know, staying in teaching or not doing the entrepreneurship, I was like, well, you know, this means I'm not going to achieve my goals by 30. And I really do think I was someone in earlier years that really, I don't know if I thought that life was over after 30, but it was not a healthy headspace to be in. So for me, I think that is probably another why for me that was I want to be successful by this age, and I want to be proud of myself and have achieved that kind of stuff. So it's a why, but I wouldn't say it's a good why, because obviously it's again, it's that reason from why I'm always pushing for better. But yeah, I think if people are truly honest, there's a why that they're doing obviously to help other people. And then there's probably the other why that is, you know, a bit more pressurizing.
When you were talking about the everything happened for a reason, I think that's, I'm very much of the same kind of cloth, and a big fan of It's a Wonderful Life at Christmas and all of that lovely stuff. And I remember I've had arguments in the past with friends, and they've been like, but that's not true. Not everything does happen for a reason. We can't do that. But I've been listening to something recently. It's like it's useful, but it's not true. But it doesn't matter, because whether it is true or not, it's helping you in that moment. Do you have any other, I guess, mottos or philosophies that you just live and die by, and this is something that is kind of etched into your skin that keeps Gabby going on a daily, weekly basis?
Yeah, I think the biggest one for me is if it were easy, everyone would do it. That one keeps me going all the time. Like when things are really tough, I'm like, well, if it was easy, like, you know, every single person you meet would be trying to do what you're doing and they're not, you know, like there is, you know, select number of people who are trying to achieve this. So I think that reminds me of like the reasons that's why it's hard. And then one of the things that we talk about a lot on the podcast is that like your 20s is not about enjoying the feast. Like your 20s is all about setting the table. So whether that's setting good relationships, whether that's, you know, setting up your finances for success, like setting up your career for success, traveling the world, understanding who you are, like your 20s is all about setting the table, and the feast will come later in your life. It could come in your 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s. But right now, stop. I think a lot of people want that kind of gratification and that instant success of like, yes, I'm like, you know, reaping all the rewards for all the hard work I've done in my 20s. And actually, you're probably not, like, that's probably not going to be the case. But if you just think about it as like setting the table, then the feast will come later.
I do find that young people, and I was the same, do struggle to delay that gratification.
Yeah,
I would say that from looking back at my 20s, I'm now sadly in the other decade that begins with 3, but that's fine, I'm happy. But looking back at my 20s, I would say that my 20s was probably for a lot of failure, and failure, yeah, is something that I've learned from. So what advice do you give to people to help them navigate failure throughout life and entrepreneurship, and how do you avoid that kind of that upset or that pain that sometimes it can cause?
If you've never failed, then you've never tried. Like, in my opinion anyway, like it's natural and it's human, like normal human behavior to like fail at some stuff. You're not going to be good at everything. That is not the reality. Like no one has ever come out the womb as an absolute perfectionist ever. And I think we pressure ourselves way too much on this. Like, it's okay to like mess up. It's okay to get things wrong. Like it's, what it would probably be bad is to fail and kind of do the same thing again and not learn from it, if that makes sense. Like, so long as you're learning from it and you're improving something, you know, failing is a really good thing. Even if like you've done something, you failed, but you think a slight variation of that would work, and again, that still fails, at least you've changed something and you've tried to learn from that experience. So I think, yeah, you need to kind of get comfortable with it. Us and our team, we're very, like, we try things, we're very experimental, and we kind of have that culture of like, you know, if we get it wrong, or, you know, if things aren't right, we will fix it next time round. We will learn from it and we will fix it. So yeah, I think you have to kind of go in with those things with an open mind.
Are you able to talk a little bit about mentorship for young entrepreneurs, how they should look at it, why they should look at it, what you've learned? I think it's really good. I think some people either sit on one side of the fence and think it wouldn't work for me, I know everything, Google's my mentor, or there's the other side where people will be very prone to, everyone's a mentor, I'm going to believe everything I see on TikTok and YouTube. So how should people look at mentorship, particularly in that younger generation?
For me, I have a different approach to mentorship. I don't look at mentors as like mentors. I look at people to be expanders for me, and I look at it like that. So I have people in my circle who I would consider to be expanders. They are either, they're probably peers in many ways, like they are doing similar, they're on similar paths to me, but maybe they're an expert in, you know, finance, or maybe they've got really good, you know, brand partnerships and stuff like that, or maybe they've got an amazing podcast and connections into that. And what they do is they expand my knowledge, they expand my understanding of the world through friendship, mostly. Like, so they end up being peers, but they are people who, you know, and likewise, I'm probably that for many other people. So they're not there as a mentor going, you should do this or you should not do this. Like, that's not how I see it. I kind of see it as like, I'm naturally just kind of learning from them through understanding what their world looks like. And therefore, my brain is expanding and I'm learning more knowledge that I can then feed into my own business. And you can have an expander, I guess, on the internet, you know, the likes of, if people do put their whole lives, I mean, a lot of people look up to like the likes of like Alex Hormozy, you know, all those kind of names, and they can still be expanders as long as you're unable to understand and tap into their brain and understand how they work. That can kind of open up your thinking. I think that's a really good thing. But I don't like to think of them necessarily as mentors because they're not really coaching you through anything. They are more just opening your eyes to different ways that you can improve. And then I think the job is for you to kind of mentor yourself, like what direction should you go in based on all the knowledge that you're taking in from all of these people who are expanding your view on the world.
It sounds like, and tell me if I'm wrong, it sounds like your view on mentorship means that it lacks accountability, like people aren't able to own something themselves. It's almost like, oh, my mentor helps me with that bit. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Yes and no. I would probably say that it's more that you have to kind of find it like within yourself to kind of take that next step. If you're just only going to listen to what's, like you say, like what someone says and that's why you do it, then that's not really going to get you very far, because as soon as that mentorship walks out the room, you're then stuck. So I think that's why you kind of got to have that power to kind of go for it yourself and take learnings from other people and kind of go for it yourself. So yeah, I would think it's that, but I think it's more the people that you surround yourself with, like they shouldn't necessarily be telling you what to do. Like, yes, it's great to have older people and, you know, people who are much further along in your journey, but I actually think I learn the most from people who are maybe 6 months to 2 years ahead of where I am, because it's no good me knowing, you know, where people are like 10 years down the line. Like I want to know what I need to get from here to here. And usually the people who remember it the clearest and who are able to give the most advice on it are the people who've literally just been through it. So yeah.
You've had some incredible guests on the podcast, Gabby, some brilliant conversations that I've enjoyed. Like, what would you say the biggest takeaway, and feel free to maybe break it down into the four categories that you mentioned earlier, but like, what do you think is from talking with your guests and learning from those conversations, what's been the biggest takeaway for you?
I think ultimately, it's this idea that nobody has it all figured out. Like, we look up to people, and maybe it's that mentorship thing again. We look up to people and we sometimes idolize where they are at in the world, and we forget that everyone is flawed human beings. Like, everyone has some shit going on in their lives that you have no understanding or even know about, and they probably don't put on the internet or share about. So I think it's that understanding. We like to break it down with people, like, yes, like they might come on, they might be an expert, might be a financial expert. They might come on and talk all about money, but then we get to the question, we go, right, what are you struggling with in your life right now that, you know, breaks down those barriers and lets us understand that nobody has it all figured out? And they go, well, actually, my love life is an absolute shambles. And it's this idea that, like, you know, if you're sat there and you're trying to figure out one area of your life, another area of your life might be great and you should celebrate that. Like, if your career is going great, fantastic, like, be proud of that. So I think for us, it's kind of this idea that nobody has it all figured out. We're all working through something. Everyone is trying to get better at something, or trying to fix some area of their life, or has some problem with their areas of with different areas of their life. And what's good in one might not be good in the other.
Mm-hmm. It's those different buckets in life, and it's a bit of a juggling act of how can I get it all good across the board. And that mm-hmm. is the joy of life. If we invited you back in 5 years, Gabby, and we're still here in the same office and we're still doing this podcast, who would we be sat with? Who do you think we'd be sat with? Where do you think you'd be? Where do you think Talk 20s would be? What's next for Gabby Mendes?
Yeah, I would really like to kind of grow the team. I've got a little taste of being an employer now for the past year and a bit. And I like having a young team and being able to help them grow and develop. I guess it's kind of like having students again in my old teaching kind of days. I like that responsibility, even though it's a huge responsibility and I do not take that lightly. I think I'd really like to continue to grow the team, to have this mission is something that can be shared, you know, this idea that we haven't all got it figured out and we're all trying to get closer to that in our 20s. So I think hopefully opening up the business and becoming, you know, having, you know, 20s fest every single year, becoming a larger media and events company, a bigger team, would really like to be kind of the biggest like podcast network in the Northwest as well, really celebrating our roots where we're based at this moment in time and offering an opportunity for creative roles to exist in the North, and they don't all have to be in London to be able to exist. So I'd hope that, you know, a bigger team, more events, and reaching more people ultimately.
It wasn't on the question list, but I saw your post the other day about the North. Me and I know I have a Southern accent, but me and Zach both grew up in Blackpool. which is, I'm sure you've heard things about.
Not a million miles away,
What took me through that post? Because it blew up about like the North and people kind of discriminate the North. Talk me through that.
Mm. Yeah, I think people like misjudge people based on their accents. And I have the most neutral accent going, and I'm very much like a chameleon. If you started talking to me in a really thick accent, my accent would blend. I'm just one of those people. Like I'm such a chameleon when it comes to that. But people often can't place my accent. And it's funny because it usually means that they just, I'm met with like, there's no prejudice that I receive as a result of my accent. But I employ a team that have really strong Northern accents. And sometimes I watch people like speak to them and it's awful. And I'm like, and it's only really kind of come to the surface. I'm like, well, you know, is it because, you know, I'm founder of the company and they're ready? But no, that they're so skilled and they're, and everyone, the people who are speaking to them know that they're really good at their jobs. There's no reason why they should be disrespecting them or underestimating them or any of those things, because you've got, they've got the evidence to suggest that's not the case. And I really do think it's come down to accents and like how they speak. And that just infuriated me. And one particular person said something to one of my team, and it triggered me. And I was like, I have to say something about this, because it's hard for them. Like, I'm an employer and I see how amazing they are. And it frustrates me that people underestimate their abilities and their capabilities. I mean, everyone else's loss is my gain. Like, I see how brilliant they are. And I want to continue to kind of hire and support young, you know, fantastic, creative young people in the North, because tell you what, everyone else is missing out.
Good. They're very lucky to have a leader like you, Gabby. I feel like we could talk to you all day. I feel like anybody listening to this, whether they're in their 20s or not, there's so many good takeaways. I guess one last question before we let you go. If I'm listening to this now and I am in my 20s and I'm a bit lost in life, what is the one book that I should read that will help me navigate my life a little bit better?
Oh, good question. I've got my books up here.
You can only have one, Gabby. Choose wisely.
Oh my gosh. If it's going to be specifically about your 20s, you should read The Defining Decade by Meg Jay. That's a brilliant book. And it really talks, like, I would love to write a book like that someday about how to kind of navigate your 20s and success. She's a researcher. She's done a lot of work on this decade and what it means to kind of be a 20 something and why some people do it right, some people do it wrong and all that kind of stuff. It's a brilliant book. And for anyone in their 20s, I would really recommend reading it. And if anyone's listening to this that is a publicist and would like love to offer me a book writing opportunity, I would love to write something similar to that, because Meg Jay is amazing.
Good. I don't doubt that 3-5 years, like, remember, don't underestimate. I'm sure that we'll be seeing Gabby Mendez in Waterstone soon. Gabby, thank you so much for joining us. Brilliant conversation. Lots of brilliant takeaways. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.